He Said, She Said, or Technically Speaking and Simply Put.
Hello, Tracy.
Hello, Corey.
It's April, He Said, She Said, and it is time to crack some eggs.
Because it's Easter?
I guess so.
Is that what you're talking about?
I was just thinking about breakfast, maybe cracking some eggs, doing a little scramble.
Are you?
Not really. I mean, I was just thinking about that. At least that just came out of my mouth anyway. Let's crack some eggs. Let's get down to it.
Oh, that's what you mean. Oh, okay. Lost in translation.
Yeah, so it's April 2014. What's cooking?
What's cooking? Well, you know, lima bean bake is cooking. And I've done this recipe before, but not for a really long time. And because the weather's getting a little better, we've actually fired up that barbecue a few times. And this is a really nice little side dish that you can have that everybody enjoys. And you can take it to a potluck party. You can have it. It's even good hot or cold. So, lima bean bake. And did you know that limas are members of the kidney family? And they're available in two types, large, which are called potato limas, and the small, which are called baby limas.
Well, they kind of look like little kidneys.
Yes, they do. And lima beans can also be called butter beans. And they're the most popular bean, apparently, in the United States, is a lima bean. Did you know that? And they really have a really nice flavor. They're hearty in soups or all by themselves. They go nice with rice. They're really soft, and they don't lose their shape. They just are smooth-tasting and really nice texture that they have, and I really quite like them. But as you were saying, they're not for every blood type. You went and blew it for me.
I often will go to the Adamo's site, Eat Right for Your Type. He's got a really nice site, and he's really developed it over the years, continuing with his research. And so you can just plug in lima bean, and I'm at diadamo.com, that's D-A-D-A-M-O.com, plug in your particular food, and then it shows you the blood type diet values. So type A, it says avoid, type B, beneficial, that's my blood type, contains component which either blocks polyamine synthesis or lowers indican levels, so that's a beneficial effect. Type AB, it says avoid, contains lectins that can agglutinize the blood. And then type O, it's neutral. It's something that you can bring in on occasion.
Yes.
But not make a staple.
Yeah, well, I do on occasion.
And then the other thing that comes to mind was the glycemic index, which I was a bit surprised about. It has a high glycemic index, unlike most beans, which are typically low.
Now, you know when they talk about, I guess it's when they're cooked, right? Because these ones I make are dry, where you have to soak them 8 hours or overnight. And I usually soak the dry bean, usually overnight before I go to bed. I throw them in a pot, right? So they're talking about the actual cooked bean.
Yeah, obviously, yeah, because I don't think we could really eat. Can you eat an uncooked lima bean? I mean, I don't think so.
It wouldn't taste very good.
They're pretty hard, aren't they? Before you cook them and soften them. So I guess the way that the sugars are tied together, the idea with glycemic indexing is that there is a specific rate at which the carbohydrates in a plant or food are released into the bloodstream, their consequent effect on insulin and its rise in the bloodstream. So that's how they sort of determined whether or not something has a high, medium, or low glycemic index.
Well, you know, how often would we make them? Maybe once or twice a year. And you know, it is nice to have a little as a treat. I think of them as a treat.
It's not a negative thing. I think that you can have a variety of glycemic index foods.
Yes. Well, these are good. The lima beans are a good source of B vitamins, B6, niacin, folates. Got a little bit of amino acids in there, lysine, some fiber, of course, iron, potassium, magnesium, and very little fat. So, hello, I'm all over that. So what I do is I take a cup of the lima bean and I put about 4 cups of warm water and then I leave it in overnight in the bowl. Then they swell up. And then I take them out and I put them in a big pot, about 4 cups of water. And then I let it boil. I bring it to a boil and I let it simmer. And it usually takes maybe about an hour. You want them to be soft when you're done. So So what we do is, after they're all soaked, what I do is I take a little olive oil, I take a half a cup of chopped onions, half a cup of chopped celery, and I crush a whole bulb of garlic. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, a whole bulb of garlic, not just one clove. We like lots of garlic. And a half a cup of balsamic vinegar, and 2 tablespoons of Dijon mustard, and 2 teaspoons of Mrs. Dash, and some red chilies, sea salt, crushed pepper, and you mix it all up. Now, be gentle with the lima bean because you don't want them to break. And you mix all that up together, and then you put it into a nice flat dish, and then you want to bake it. Don't cover it. And you want to bake it about 375 for about 20 minutes. And then you can cool it, and then it's just really, really yummy. Now, you can always add more spices. This is a basic dish that I make, but you can always add whatever you want into it. This is a little, just an idea of how to make them up.
Yes.
You know, get creative on your own, right?
And wasn't that something I said to you when we went on our first date? I said, please be gentle.
Whatever.
I've got these very sensitive feelings, and you could hurt me really easily. Right?
Yeah. Well, what happened to that? I have no idea what happened.
I woke up.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, you know, this is just a nice little dish to have, like I said, and you can keep it in the fridge for 3 or 4 days. And you can eat it cold. It's delicious cold. It's delicious room temperature. And it's delicious hot. And everybody loves it.
They are quite delicious. Very dense.
Hearty.
Source of nutrition, right?
Yeah. So
you
can add
the olive oil that you mix in probably modifies the glycemic index, too, on its own. But you'd have these, what? It's a side dish. Is that what you're at?
A side dish, yeah. Side dish to your whatever you're having, right?
Right.
You can make it a main dish. I mean, sometimes when I've got it in the fridge, I'll just take a couple of tablespoons of it and munch on it, and then I'm happy. Then I run around a little bit more. But yeah.
Yeah.
And you only have, like, you don't only take a scoop of it when you put it on your plate, right?
Yes.
Like a big couple of tablespoons you put on your plate, because there's other things that you're eating as well. So like I said, it's just a side dish.
Yes, and just as a side note, the lima bean is named after Lima. I guess maybe we call Lima Peru. Like, I've been to Lima, and you say it's Lima, but maybe it's pronounced Lima. Anyway, the lima bean is named after and spelt the same way as Lima, where it was found at about 1500 A.D. So it's kind of got an interesting history there. Lots of beans in those cultures.
Yes, for sure. But lima, when you say lima, that's a long I. There's no E to make it long, so it would be a short I, so it would be lima. So lima beans.
Yeah, but everybody says lima beans.
I know.
That's the lima beans, man.
English language, man, is really odd.
I think half of what we talk and say is probably incorrect, but nobody really knows the difference, and nobody really cares.
Yeah, exactly. Well, anyway, that's my little what's cooking recipe.
Okay, so get your lima on. Lima, I guess.
Whatever.
Hey, who was our last month's special guest?
Last month's special guest was Dr. Hans Krugler. He is an author, speaker, and a pioneer in anti-aging specialist. Plus, he really does have a wonderful sense of humor.
Yeah, he's a good guy. He's been around the block, too.
Yeah, he certainly has. He's a pioneer. And he says that doing certain good health practices can detour aging. They are true anti-aging modalities and actually lengthen telomeres, which is really interesting about the telomeres. That's the new thing right now. And he says, number one, stress is the biggest telomere shortening factor. Ooh.
It's like this waves. I've been studying light lately. I just watched the latest episode of Cosmos last night, looking at spectrums of light and wavelength patterns and how light carries energy and radiation and heat, you know, when you stand in the sun, and it's got all these colors too. So the focus on telomeres is very cool. I was doing some research on aging, and that's how I came across Dr. Hans Krugler, because he was doing an interview from World Health Network and the anti-aging community, and he was talking about exercise being so absolutely important and vital, which is really nice to hear that from an older gentleman.
Oh, absolutely. He's a major advocate of exercise, diet, and supplementation, so he's definitely on our side. And he really does agree with that cutting the PE programs in the schools are wrong.
Yeah.
And then the kids see their parents inactive and not training, And so then it's a vicious cycle, because you did ask him, why don't people get it? And this is what he said about cutting the programs. But what's interesting, he said he used to teach chemistry in university, and he says that if you understand chemistry, you can understand what's going on in your body. That's
right.
That's really cool.
Well, it does come down to chemicals. Yeah. We're made up of chemicals. The whole universe is made up of elements, and that's what you study when you study chemistry, is elements and atoms and how they interrelate and connect. And a lot of people don't know some of the basic structures, functional elements of the elements themselves. So, yeah, it's important to get into some chemistry.
Well, one of the things that got him really into weight training hardcore was that he was in a very bad car accident that damaged his heart. And he was in his 70s, I believe, when he was in this car accident. And to recover, he said to himself, what is an athlete? And he says to himself, an athlete is a bunch of muscles. And then he says, what is a heart? And he said, a heart is a bunch of muscles. So he did the opposite to convention, the Costanza principle, and he trained with very heavy weights, hardcore, and he made a full recovery.
We've seen that in other students and friends and clients that we've met all over the world.
Yes.
They tell us these fantastic stories, how they were told they could never heal, never get better, they were going to end up...
Oh, if you've ever had anything with your heart gone wrong, it's like, oh, no, man, you can't do anything anymore. Walking is about as hard as you can go. See?
Yeah, so never take that kind of advice from a doctor who says you're never going to get better, you're stuck for the rest of your life on the medication or whatever it is that they advocate, typically as being very negative.
Yes, and major hardcore advocate of vitamin C.
Yeah.
And he wrote about this in one of his books, Seven Keys to a Healthy Life, which I want to read.
Yeah, that'd be a good book.
Yeah, and one of his favorite anti-aging supplements are Velvet Deer Antler. Growth hormone in that, which is like the old Chinese remedies, right?
Yeah, there was actually a few years back I had someone approach me, and they actually had a bunch of deers and wanted to produce this, and they were asking me what direction to take.
Mm-hmm.
They were interested in this Velvet Deer Antler stuff, so I guess with Kugler's stamp of approval, it actually does elevate growth hormone release or activate its release in the system, equal to taking the recombinant form that he was taking before he took the deer antler velvet.
Right. So anyway, I'd like to thank Dr. Kugler. And also, we are going to try to get him back yearly, because he says there's lots of new science. Every year there's new science. So he's one of the guys.
Well, you know what I like? The guy's 78, so he's still plunging in.
Yes.
He's not resting on his laurels. You think, okay, he's older, he's retired, he's half blind, he's bumping into walls. No. The guy's training, he's, you know, kind of like you and me when he's staggering at nighttime. So the idea here is that he's proactive, he's ambitious, he's moving forward, he's not really allowing his age to be a factor at all. He just continues to move on.
Bumping into walls.
Yeah. Well, isn't that what old people do?
I must be getting old then, because I'm bumping.
They start making weird noises. You know.
Okay, anyway, thank you, Dr. Kugler. We'll be seeing you again.
Yes, and I see here now you've got something happening for your hot topic. So what's on your mind, dear?
My hot topic is for the cause. I'm kind of a little over it, and I hope nobody gets a little offended with me, but this is just my opinion, right? And we're all entitled to our own opinion. But, you know, doing everything for the cause. Somebody else's cause. Why don't we do it for our own cause? Now, you have to understand the way I was brought up. My mother said that God helps those who help themselves. And I wasn't brought up religiously. And she also says charity begins at home. Now, this was drilled into my head as a kid. So if we're going to help ourselves, we help our family first. And we help ourselves first. Then we help our family first. So that was drilled into me. And most of the so-called causes that people run for, climb, hike, do whatever they do, are man-made diseases. That's what that is. You and I were chatting last night, and it's not the cause. It's the symptom of what's happening, right?
Yeah, so when you're saying run for the cause, we should reword it and say run for the symptom.
Yes, run for the symptom.
Okay, so there obviously are some children and individuals that are so-called innocent. They do get taken down for no apparent reason, although everything can be explained if you spend enough time researching it to identify causality, the lifestyle, the attitude, and how they lived and ate and all the rest of it. But the vast majority of the people, because cancer's on the rise and it's proliferating as fast as cancer cells do, you know, inside the system, these are mutated cells that come from you. Your own cell mutates, the genes get mutated, and they proliferate. They have this phenomenon. I was just reading, studying it this morning, contact inhibition. When you put cells in a petri dish, normally healthy ones, they come in contact with each other and they stop growing. But cancer cells don't obey the laws of normality. They're like mutants, right?
Yes.
So this one cell is a progenitor. It's not like billions of all these different cancer cells. It's usually one cell that escapes the system's surveillance and it doesn't get zapped out and destroyed. And it allows, for whatever reason, because the environment's hostile to health but conducive to cancer. Now, this is where the individual responsibility comes in. Are you, as an individual, creating an environment that is hostile to cancer or hostile to health? Now, let's say that we're getting millions and millions, one in two now, people getting cancer. So we're running, you know, for all these causes, which are really not causes. I mean, what is the cause of most of the cancers? Is it something that we can just throw money at and fix and get a drug? No. So the whole thing is completely distorted.
Yeah, that's my attitude. And so I really get offended when people say, do it for the cause, do it for the cause. Now listen, I would give to the cause of a natural disaster, such as a flood, a hurricane, an earthquake, if a family needed it. I would be there in a heartbeat because it was beyond their control, right? But when people are, I look at their lifestyle and then they're really ill and they're sick and they haven't done anything their whole life to help themselves, and then you want me to give you money to help you? It's a full-time job for me to take care of myself. And I know that those out there who are listening to this, you work hard on your good health. It just doesn't come naturally. You've got to work at it, right? And then these people that are going out for the cause, I mean, or who are ill because they haven't taken care of themselves, I'm not going to support them. You can call me whatever name you want. I really don't care.
Well, it's kind of crazy because what I see is a lot of unfit, sick people who are so-called running for the cause and donating money for the cause, but they themselves, they're not doing what they are responsible and obligated to do for themselves. So it's almost like you can shift the responsibility mentally from yourself. If I give to the cause, if I show up for the cause, then that will exempt me from having to do the work or taking responsibility for my own personal life.
Well, I think that what some of them really believe, they believe that they just get cancer, it comes out of the air, and that if they support the cancer, or whatever it may be, Corey, some disease.
Well, what are some of the reasons? You've got a list here, like why people...
Okay, but what they do is they think, I'm going to give money, and when I get it, this problem, this disease, then they're going to cure it for me.
Yeah, it's like it's an inevitable conclusion because they know that they're living in such a way. And I think a lot of people have no knowledge of what cancer is.
Yeah. Okay, so I just wrote down some of the reasons that people would give as a donor, and someone I know asked me to give, and I wanted to help them. I felt emotionally moved by someone's story. I want to feel I'm not powerless in the face of need and can help. I want to feel I'm changing someone's life. I feel a sense of closeness to a community or a group. I need a tax deduction. I want to memorialize someone who is struggling or died of a disease, for example. I was raised to give to charity. It's a tradition in my family. I want to be hip and supporting this charity. I get to wear a yellow wrist. It's in style. It makes me feel connected to other people and builds my social network. I want to have a good image of myself and of my company. I give for religious reasons. God wants me to share my affluence. I want to be seen as a leader or a role model. I want a good image of myself. I want to leave a legacy. These are reasons why people donate and do for the cause, right?
Right.
So,
and you know, we don't get to these causes. I don't ever because I am focusing on causality. It's just like I don't give money to people who just ask for it. They're just sitting there saying, with their hand out, saying, give me money. just give me money. And I'm thinking in my head, why? Because you exist.
Yeah.
Now, I have lived homelessly. I've lived as a homeless person in New York City, in Rome, parts of the world, as part of an experiment just to see what's in these people's minds and who they are and how they got there. And it's some of the best experiences of my life. But I can tell you this, that in my experience, which is limited, 80-20 applies here. 80% of people that are homeless are there because they want to be. Now, that sounds harsh, it sounds cruel, it sounds bizarre. But when I say want to be, humans can change their lives by not wanting or wanting something. They can dig themselves out of holes. There's immigrants that come to this country with nothing and build empires. There's other people that give up. And that's what I found about the homeless person. A lot of them have just given up. They've absolutely given up. But we can't give up. We have to carry the torch. We have to plod. It's like in wartime. You can't give up, otherwise the enemy will destroy you.
They lose hope.
Yeah, they've had a very bad or negative experience, which, you know, we have empathy for. We see that and say, oh, that person had a bad experience. So there they are doing nothing. They've completely given up. And now it's my responsibility to save all of them from themselves. Yeah. How do you do that?
Right.
Well, you can't.
Yeah, exactly. And I just know that me, I'm 55 years old right now, and we've got grandchildren. And I just, it's just really, I have to really concentrate on myself. Because if you spread yourself too thin, that's when the trouble comes in. And you really have to learn when to say no and when to say yes. And saying no does not mean that you don't want to do it, that you don't care. But the thing is, you've got to preserve yourself. Because, you know, you plan on, at 55, I plan on living for a long, long time. And you don't want to burn out. And believe me, as you age, you burn out quicker than you did when you were younger. Right? So you really have to preserve those internal organs, right?
Yes. The other thing I don't like about the money that's raised is that it's given towards individuals, organizations, and institutions that we have no knowledge of what they're doing with that money. And the knowledge that I do have to some extent is that they're directing it all towards trying to find a magic bullet, which does not exist. They'll never find one. A person cannot abuse themselves, abandon themselves, neglect themselves, do absolutely zero work, be completely unfit and fat and full of toxicity, and then reach out at the last moment when they're full of cancer and say, give me that magic bullet. There's no such thing. It's anti-reality, it's anti-logic, and it's anti-science, and yet we keep continually doing this as a society.
Well, Corey, it's a business. We all know that, right?
It is a business.
It's a business. And there's a lot of nonprofit organizations. Now, I think that's very interesting, nonprofit, because people don't realize that nonprofit organizations make money. They hire staff. The staff are paid very well, at least the ones that I know.
And some of the CEOs get gigantic salaries, huge bonuses, you know, like
what they do.
The Children Foundation, and the guy at the top's making a couple mil a year.
And then what they do is they hire a lot of volunteers. So the volunteers are doing all the work. Because I was involved in nonprofit organizations, and I was a volunteer. I worked my hiney off, and I never got paid a red nickel for it, yet all these people that are telling me what to do are all getting paid.
Yeah, because the volunteers assume that it's all for a good cause. They know nothing about the cause. They actually don't know anything about it.
So me no do that no more. My nonprofit organization is the Teresa K. Hawley Retirement Fund of Hawaii.
Yeah, I like that one. I'll donate to that.
Anyways, there you have it.
Yeah, and you know, it reminds me once that I did have a moving to Hawaii dance sort of fundraiser. It was not a fundraiser. I'm a capitalist. I am and laissez-faire. I don't want to impose my views or my offering to anybody. People come in and participate if they want. It's mutual barter and trade. It's favorable. But I put a dance on. I brought some music in. I got some beer and a license. And I had a big party and raised about $2,000. Now, that wasn't a fund for some cause. It was just a smart person, a young person, namely me, generating a means to create some revenues. And I drew in people, like, let's move to Hawaii. And they thought, oh, yeah, this is great. Let's have a fun time. We had a blast.
That sounds like a good time.
Instead
of, you could do that again today.
Take your time. Like, this is what I'm challenging people with today, is that be aware of the significance of your time and what is it that you are doing. Who are these people that you're participating with? What are they doing? What's going on behind the scenes? Do you really think that what they are presenting is really happening? Because for the most part, it's not true. We perceive something to be what it is, and it's not. It's false, and we're being duped. We're being taken advantage of, especially when you look at the ultimate reality in science. What causes cancer? Why are there so many people dying of cancer? Is it because we haven't invented a cure or a drug that's going to make some big pharmaceutical company billions of dollars?
Well, I mean, we just had a friend who had prostate cancer surgery, right?
Yeah.
You can run for the prostate cancer. But let's take a look at this guy's lifestyle, shall we?
Totally.
Right? We know who we're talking about, and his lifestyle wasn't no good. Right? So there you go. And
so it's no surprise when these people go down.
You know, I'm not surprised.
But, you know, like, that doesn't mean we don't love our friend. It doesn't mean we don't care about it.
No.
But you have to see things as they are.
Exactly. Anyways, there you go. That's my little pet peeve or my hot topic, which is hot.
Hot. So as soon as you have your little dance organized or whatever, I'll be there to support you, dear, on your way to Hawaii.
There you go.
And what is your final word?
My final word is by P.J. O'Rourke. Giving money and power to government is like giving whiskey and car keys to teenage boys.